Welcome to Taproots on Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Marla Camp, publisher of Edible Austin and member of Edible Communities. And I'd like to thank our sponsor today, Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on their rich, sustainable native grasslands in central California coastline. The result is beef that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. Well, on Taproots, we dig deep to explore America's growing local food movement and to connect local family farmers, chefs, and foodies together and to you. Taproots airs at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time every first Monday of the month. We'll cover topics like eating and cooking seasonally, how to strengthen our local food economies, how to raise and grow more of your own food, and who's out there making a difference and paving the way to a more sustainable and thoughtful way of living. So please send me your ideas about what you'd like to hear more on the show and people you'd like to hear from. You can email me at marla@edibleaustin.com. Well, today we're going to explore the idea of eating for pleasure and for health. My guests will be author Ann Isham, who wrote the book Eat Chocolate, Lose Weight, and chef Alain Brault, whose recent book, How to Lower Your Cholesterol with French Gourmet Food, is a real gem for the health-conscious gourmand. We'll also hear from Carol Ann Sale and with her Downtown on the Farm report, and she just had a recent visit from author Deborah Madison, so we're excited to get an update on what the weekend was like for her. So we're going to take a little break here, and then we'll be right back with our first guest.
When we first met, you sent me flowers, yeah, wooed me in classy restaurants. You telephoned me every hour, said, babe, we'll give you anything you want. Chocolates and strawberries had me down upon my knees. And every time you said, baby, please, I knew what I had to do. Now it's too late to stop loving you. Yeah. Too late to stop loving you. You gave me love and that's a fact. Now you're saying you want it back. That ain't something I can do.
Welcome back. This is Marla Camp, publisher of Edible Austin and member of Edible Communities. You're listening to Taproots on Heritage Radio Network, and the show today is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, our first guest today is Ann Isham, and Ann is a philosopher, a storyteller, and an adventurer. She's also an independent chocolatier whose goal is optimal health and fitness for her readers. She's the graduate of École des Chocolats, Professional School of Chocolate Arts in Vancouver, British Columbia, and founding president of the Texas Association of Fine Chocolate. Anne is also the author of her latest book, Eat More Chocolate, Lose Weight Anyway, which is a sequel to her Eat Chocolate, Lose Weight. So welcome, Anne.
Thank you, Marla. It's nice to talk with you.
Well, thanks for being on the show today. So, Anne, tell us what inspired you to write the book, Eat Chocolate, Lose Weight.
Well, I have loved chocolate all my life. I've been a foodie almost all my life. I made my first batch of brownies when I was 10. So I've always eaten it, and that's not unusual. A lot of people feel that way. But I just got very interested in researching when I heard about a study out of Baylor Medical in Dallas that found that men who ate less than an ounce of chocolate a day, maybe as much as 5 ounces a week, had a much reduced incidence of all kinds of heart and artery disease. And I was amazed by that, and that inspired me to want to research, and I researched history and development, and I kept coming across more and more health studies. And from all I can tell, it makes you younger, smarter, happier, and healthier.
Well, those are all great things to aspire to.
So, yeah, and they're all scientific. They're proof scientifically to do that.
Well, and just a little bit more about your background. I know that you're a marathon runner and have always had a strong interest in health and fitness. So just tell us a little bit about that, too.
Well, I was a marathon runner, and then I went to race walking about 25 years ago and competed in that for a few years. And then now I walk every day, but I've walked. That's sort of the disclaimer on my book. I stay fit and healthy with both diet and exercise, and I've averaged more or less 100 miles a month for 31 years.
So do we all have to walk that much in order to eat some chocolate?
No, you don't. You don't really have to do that, but you it is good not just it's good for your health, your looks, and your self-image to get out and move every day.
Well, and back
and
to chocolate.
And you get addicted to it very quickly, I think.
Well, that and chocolate, both have an addictive property, I think. But back to chocolate, can you tell us some of the fun chocolate facts and also just some of the recently published health benefits of chocolate?
Oh, yes, I would love to. That's one of my favorite things. As I said, it makes you younger, smarter, happier, and healthier. It's been proven to enhance mental dexterity, response time, and focus. It has been proven to suppress a cough better than codeine. So if you're ever at a symphony or something, you know, they have those little mints. Those things make me cough. But the cocoa butter in some nice dark chocolate will soothe your throat. Not milk chocolate, but dark. It reduces the incidence, of course, of all types of heart and artery disease. And that study was probably 25 years ago. I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but these studies about the health benefits have been going on for some time. It hasn't just been in the last few years.
And that's due to the high antioxidants that occur in chocolate.
It is
chocolate.
Partly due to that, but also I think it has some things to do with the complicated fat structure in cocoa butter. Cocoa butter is made of four different stearic acids, and about a third of them are not really assimilated by the body, and we think that the triglycerides attach to those fat cells, and then they're carried out of the body, and so that might be that could be the reason that it reduces artery disease.
Well, and interestingly, we're going to hear a little bit more about that kind of transfer of triglycerides out of the body, or out of certain areas of the body anyway, from our next guest, who also has done a lot of studies on food and
oh,
cholesterol
great.
And fat. So,
well, I believe so strongly in the health benefits that on the days that I don't eat chocolate itself, or, you know, in some form, tasting or whatever, I eat raw cacao powder. So I do make sure to get it every day. But another thing that a lot of your listeners will find interesting, I think, it makes women's skin thicker, more youthful looking, and resistant to skin cancer and sunburn.
Hmm.
And there was a specific study that found that to be true, that they did on groups of women, and that is probably totally due to the antioxidant level.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, as you know, it's got the highest level of antioxidants of any food, but I think that it might have a more diversity of antioxidants. You know, different foods have different kinds mm-hmm. of antioxidant, and I think that chocolate, because it has over 300 chemical compounds in it, and they don't know what all it does, but every study I've heard of, I've never heard of a study that comes out that it does something bad. And in fact, it's been proven that it does not cause acne.
That's true. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is you think of foods that are high in antioxidants, and you think of blueberries or green tea and even red wine, all of which do have high levels of antioxidants, but chocolate taps out higher than all of those.
Yes, it does. And I just think that it is, you know, I would say it's the ideal essential food, but I don't believe in one essential food, because another thing I believe strongly in is eating diversely and eating real food. Mm-hmm. As Michael Pollan says, eat real food, not so much mostly plants.
Mm-hmm.
That's his whole message. And so I believe that getting your antioxidants from a broad range of plants is the best way.
Well, and chocolate is a plant. It's one thing I learned from your book is that chocolate is a vegetable.
Yes.
And interestingly, many of the recipes in your book are vegan as well. So.
Yeah. I've gone vegetarian. I'm not vegan, but I did do a vegan cake because I recognized that, you know, that there are getting to be more and more vegans, and vegans like sweets. You know, they're not these pure beings that eat only, you know, raw grains and greens. They like a diversity of things as well.
Well, getting back to the pleasure part of chocolate, in the book, yeah. You're very specific about how there are two distinct aspects of chocolate. And why don't you talk a little bit about these two different distinctions and why
yeah.
it's important and how it organized your book, too.
Yeah, I believe very strongly in the celebratory aspects, because I believe that chocolate is one of the best ways we have of conveying love. And as a little aside, sometimes it's the only thing you can do for a loved one. And I've had some loved ones who've been very sick and they've gone on. And, you know, there was a point when I could still delight them with chocolate when I couldn't do another thing. And that was such a good thing for me as well as them. So there's that aspect. But also, I think that, you know, when someone's celebrating and says, look, I made a chocolate cake because I'm celebrating, you eat it. And then the next day, maybe you up your exercise a little.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a good many pretty decadent recipes in my book. But I've got a little of the Choco Monkey Chocolate Frequency Indulgence Guide.
Why don't you explain that a little bit?
Okay. I evolved this Choco Monkey, my little symbol, from one of the Maya glyphs for chocolate. So it looks a little bit like that, only a more modernized. It's something between a Pac-Man and a Maya glyph, I guess. And if there's just one of those on a recipe, then it's a really healthful daily eating kind of thing. And the more Choco Monkeys there are, the more decadent, up to five, which would indicate a recipe that you'd only want to try on birthdays ending with zero, let's say.
So just to give a point of reference to your book, for example, you have a recipe for hearty Japanese yam soup with cacao
yeah.
powder, and I assume that is a one Choco Monkey.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is, and it's one of my favorite food things. I just love sweet potatoes, and when I found Japanese yams, I liked them even better. They're a little bit sweet, as sweet potatoes are, but they have a texture a little bit more like a real potato. So it has more body to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very simple recipe. And yes, it's vegan and just one Choco Monkey, and it's a very good comfort food.
Well, and then to go to the other end of the spectrum, I found a recipe in your book that had five or six Choco Monkeys, I think, and that
yeah.
was the Cherry Bomb for Mom.
Yeah.
I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that.
I designed this bomb for my mother's 80th birthday, and she was quite a character, and I write about her in the book, but this bomb, I actually made two of them, and they were really big because we served 80-something people with these two bombs that I made. One was the chocolate hazelnut, and my mom loved chocolate cherries,
mm-hmm.
so I made this thing called Cherry Bomb Mom, and it had a cherry chocolate mousse filling and these layers of a chocolate Genoise cake, and you do the layers with a layer of cake and a layer of a ganache, a very thin layer of ganache to kind of hold the cake stable, and then a layer of the cherry chocolate filling. And it makes a thing kind of the size and shape of a basketball almost, or it's flat on the bottom, but it's very rounded. And
there is a photograph of this in the book.
Yeah. It's got, besides the cherry chocolate mousse and the Genoise cake, there's a you pour a ganache over it, and that's what sets it, by the way. I want to say, if someone wants to try this from my book, which I'd highly recommend for an event, just have faith, because when you start pouring the ganache over it, it sets and glues it together. And then you pour a dark chocolate glaze that kind of drips down, and then you've got whipped cream. Very decadent.
Well, we've tested several recipes from your book a few issues back. We had a 14-year-old boy make the ganache for our Department of Organic Kids. He loved to cook and he loved chocolate, so we steered him towards your book, and he made just the most delicious ganache, and that was sort of a little training for him also in the art of chocolate making.
That's what I love about ganache, and I really like mine. There's a recipe for the very best chocolate, the very best birthday cake, I think, is a cherry chocolate surprise birthday cake. And it's kind of got some of the components of the bomb, but it's much easier to make. You know, it's a layer cake, and the ganache, the icing that you pour on it is a ganache, and it is so simple that, as you pointed out, a child can do it. But it is, you know, people just rave about this icing. And I just think it's so sad that people will buy a can of icing when it's hardly more trouble to make your own, and it's so much better tasting.
Right. Well, and as wonderful as your book is for the recipes, you also talk a lot about lifestyle and how you, in fact, you define it as an 11-step strategy for the chocolate life. And
yeah,
we don't have time to go through all 11 steps, and I definitely want to inspire people to go get your book and find out for themselves what these are. But just if you could just briefly tell us one or two of these steps, just to get the idea that it's a total way of looking at life and living.
Yeah, some of them are just tips for getting yourself going, but one of the most important things that anybody can do, and I recommend this: if you want to eat good chocolate, you have to read the label and look for chocolate to be the first ingredient. And I always say, read the label, and if you see things you don't recognize as food or words you can't pronounce, don't eat it. And that, I feel like that's really good advice. But I think that people couldn't help but lose weight because there are so many manufactured foods that we eat that we don't really realize what all they're doing. And they're manufactured to make us want more, not to satisfy us. So that's one of the things, is to try to eat more real food and simpler food. And then as far as the exercise part, one thing I recommend strongly is getting an exercise buddy rather than investing in, you know, buying a membership somewhere or buying a piece of machinery or buying a membership. I think I said that. But the point is that you need someone. We all need a buddy, because we will disappoint ourselves or we'll waste our own money long before we would disappoint a friend. And if you're scheduled to meet a friend on the corner at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, you'll be there. If you just say, I'm going to do this, you might not. So that is one of the little tips. I also think that doing little bursts of exercise is worthwhile. You don't have to carve out a whole hour and and work out hard. You can just make it a point to run up the stairs for something when you would normally wait to do that, or just make it your policy not ever to ride the elevator up less than three floors, or set your own number. But getting bursts of exercise and kind of getting your body going for just, 5 minutes several times a day, that actually works.
Mm-hmm. Well, and small pieces of chocolate, too, speaking of small.
Oh, yeah. As far as eating chocolate, we tend to eat fast in our society, and we tend to be doing something else so often. So I recommend that you focus on your chocolate, hold it in your mouth as long as you can, because you just won't believe how much better the chocolate is when it's been in your mouth for 1 minute. Because it gives the fat, the cocoa butter, a chance to melt and distribute the flavors, and it's just amazing.
Well, Anne, I want to tell our listeners where you can get your book, how you can get it. I'd like to recommend that not only do you get a copy of this book for yourself, because I think you'll really enjoy it, and it's a fountain of knowledge and inspiration, but it would make a great Mother's Day gift. We're coming up on the traditional Mother's Day, so
yes, it does, and I might add, it has some heartwarming stories about my family. I grew up in a family of 11 children, and so I've gotten a lot of good comment on the stories about my mom and dad and siblings. Mm-hmm. But the best way, since this is a radio program, and I don't know where people will be shopping, I sell it only in independently owned businesses, local businesses. So you can get it at Powell's.com and also BookPeople.com the Book People store, which is in Austin, Texas.
And you can order online from anywhere.
Yeah, you can order online through Book People or Powell's, and you can walk right into Book People or Powell's and get it, and some other stores.
So that's Austin and Portland, and then online from both of those locations.
That's right.
And Anne, thanks so much for being on our show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Marla. I
really enjoy talking with you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back with Carol Anne Sale with Downtown on the Farm.
Little girl by the strawberry patch, let me help you lift the latch. Strawberries picking a few, I love strawberries too. Sunny hair covers your sunny smile, let me help you pick for a while. Strawberries picking a few, I love strawberries too. Your basket's empty but your mouth is full, what's your mama to do? I hope you don't get a tummy ache, I hope you don't get the strawberry flu. Little girl by the strawberry patch, let me help you lift the latch. Strawberries picking a few, I love strawberries too.
Welcome back. This is Marla Camp, publisher of Edible Austin and member of Edible Communities. You're listening to Taproots on Heritage Radio Network, and the show today is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, our next guest is Carol Anne Sale, and she and her husband Larry Butler founded Boggy Creek Farm. It's an all-organic farm in Austin, Texas. And they have been supplying our community with the most pleasurable local food you can imagine for many years now. So welcome to the show, Carol Anne.
Well, thank you, Marla.
Well, what's out there right now that might be particularly delicious on your farm?
Well, we're getting ready to wind up strawberries, and of course we've got a lot of them frozen too. So we'll be doing strawberry smoothies all summer, I imagine. But we have a lot of things going in. We'll have squash very soon. The tomatoes are setting fruit. We have Cherokee purples out there right now, green still, but they're growing. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a lot of still doing a lot of greens, different chards and some kale and the last of the lettuce. And we our fava beans are done, but we're still picking snow peas and scorzonero and just all kinds of interesting things.
Well, I know that last year it was really sad because the strawberries never really had much of a crop anywhere in Central Texas. We just didn't have the right combination of weather.
It was terrible.
This year it's different, right?
Yes, it's very different. Well, last winter was very dry, and strawberries like rain. And this winter we were blessed with rain every few days. It felt like it was Oregon here. It's very gentle rain, and the strawberries just soaked that up. And so they turned out very sweet and delicious, and we've had a lot of them. We considered a very good to harvest this spring. And everything was great because of the winter rain. Our fava beans were amazing, just huge, like a foot long and stuffed with beans. And the new potatoes are coming on now, and they're exquisite. But the strawberries, it was really wonderful to have a good year because they are problematic here. We have to treat them like annuals. And if you got a lot of heat on them or if you have to use bad water, I mean, they just don't do. They're mm-hmm. finicky.
Well, and there's nothing like going out and picking a fresh strawberry and popping it in your mouth.
Absolutely, absolutely, especially with the warm sun on your back. You know, not too hot, of course, but warm sun and the aroma from the berries greets you before you even get to the field. Mm. And when you smell the strawberries, you know they're going to be sweet. That's the key, the smell.
Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you about and thought you might be able to fill us in on, I know you had a very special guest out at the farm this weekend,
yes.
and she's got a new book coming out,
yes.
or that's just now out, and it also fits our theme of eating for pleasure and for health. And so I wondered if you could tell us a bit about your visit from Deborah Madison.
Well, our wonderful guest was Deborah Madison, and this weekend it was all things Deborah. We had her here in the house, in the Pioneer Room, and we cooked simple things together, not much, but we had a big book signing for her at the farm stand, and she sold out of her new book, which is seasonal fruit desserts from the orchards and the farms and so forth. And it's a gorgeous book, and it is really a sublime pleasure just to taste it with your eyes. The photographs are by Laurie Smith, and they're gorgeous. And Deborah always does wet recipes that are easy to understand and not intimidating at all. And she always gives you a lot of leeway to change things if you like. And she was here all weekend. We took her to a food salon down in South Texas where all of us were cooking in a very nice kitchen on the ranch of Loncito Cartwright, who does lamb, beef, and soon to do pork. And so in that kitchen, there were a lot of chefs. And, of course, Deborah fixed a wonderful spring salad with our arugula and our shelled peas and other little items, and we just had a great time eating and talking about food. It was truly an experience.
Well, and Loncito Cartwright has had, this is the third or fourth, I think, of his wonderful food salons that he's
yes.
Had on his ranch down in South Texas.
Yes.
And I would love to go to one. I haven't had a chance to go myself yet, but it just sounded like a great opportunity to relax with chefs. Chefs don't often get a chance to just relax and cook for pure pleasure.
That's right,
so.
And it was. It was, you know, of course, Loncito provided a lot of lamb, and Hugh Fitzsimmons and Sarah Fitzsimmons were there with their bison. And so we had two wonderful meats that were presented in every fashion in the world. And then we provided the vegetables and the strawberries. And so all of that, the chefs were inspired, and the meals were incredible. So Rebecca Rather from Fredericksburg was there. She did kolaches and pigs in the blanket and other breakfast things. And so it really was a pig out, to tell you the truth. It was great.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. And there's a recipe in Deborah's book, I think, for strawberry dessert. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think there might be strawberries
yet.
On the cover even.
Yeah, right. Well, it's a beautiful book, and she knows fruit. She's been to practically every farmer's market in the country. She knows so many farmers. She supports all the local food, she would not want to do any cooking with a strawberry that was picked green, for instance, and gassed later. So she
mm-hmm.
knows the quality of the fruit and that's fresh and organic and local.
And she's such a supporter. yes, of farmers markets in general.
Yes.
Well, tell us a little bit, Carolyn, because you're truly the pioneer of organic farming, I think, in at least in the urban parts of Austin. There's so much to be said about how food picked fresh from your farm and it doesn't travel far to your plate truly gives you the most pleasure. But I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that in your experience and also in, you know, just from your business standpoint.
Well, you know, we have a farm stand here on the farm, and we are within 2.5 miles from the state capital of Texas. So you can walk to the capital in 30 minutes if you desire. But the big pleasure that we have is to be able to put really fresh stuff on our farm stand, really fresh produce, because we harvest during market, all through market. I have two wonderful harvesters, both named Maria, and the Marias are out there. They gauge what we have and how it's selling in the farm stand, and they are out there before I even say, Maria's, we need more arugula. And so they're bringing it in constantly, and the customers, the visitors, are just in ecstasy because this is fresher and easier for them than if they were growing it in their own garden. And, of course, we do talk about gardening because, really, freshness is equal to organic, in my opinion. If you're eating organic but it's 2 weeks old, you're not getting much out of it. So when you taste something that is so fresh, that's quivering with life still, has energy in it, the pleasure is palpable. And it's beautiful, and the colors are rich because it's not faded away by age. So it's really an honor to be able to offer this fresh food to people and, you know, explaining. I mean, when the chard comes in just picked and somebody's getting ready to pick a bunch out of the tub that was 30 minutes ago, I'll say, wait, here comes more selection. This is 5 minutes from the field. And they're happy and I'm happy. And the Marias are beaming with pride because they have put it on the table fresh.
Wow.
So there's a lot of pleasure in that.
Well, and I know you have quite the following among the chefs in town, too, the chefs who really care about local food and getting fresh food for their own kitchens.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, they, for the same reason, they know it's fresh. I mean, you know, of course, I always let them know. I can't help it, you know, because they may be picking up some fava beans and they're excited to get fava beans and they look so good and beautifully green and all that. But I want them to know that it was just picked. And when they light up when they hear that. So they are experts, of course, at preparing food, and they always tell the customers who ask them, what do you do with that? They always say, very little. It's so good that I do very little with it. Of course, I'm sure they do a little magic, you know. I've been to their restaurants. It's all very tasty. But in truth, you don't have to do much if the food is really fresh. So, I mean, that's easier on the home cooks. They just don't have to be afraid of this fresh produce.
Well, and that's so true. Whenever you get food home from the farmer's market and you make it that evening, there's just nothing tastes better, and you really have to do very little to it, as you said.
Yeah.
So the clue, I think, for people going to restaurants is to not only ask the chefs or the wait staff, you know, what is on the menu that might be local and fresh or seasonal and fresh, but check out the daily specials. Some restaurants will have chalkboard specials, and those generally are using, at a good restaurant, again, that believes in local food, they're going to be using whatever they got at the farmer's market or from the farm stand or their favorite farmer. And you might try unusual things like fava beans that you might not have had before. Or I noticed garlic scapes at the farmer's market this weekend, too. So I went right to my Google and checked out how to cook with garlic scapes because I wasn't sure, but it was just delicious and fresh, and I know that those are going to be on the menus in some restaurants right now too.
Right. I mean, that's what you'll find. You'll find things at a farmer's market or a farm stand that you will not find in your local grocery store because the farmers, first of all, are studying all this, and they're trying to bring everything they can out of the field. So they'll go that extra step to do garlic scapes or to do baby beets or whatever to extend the harvest primarily. But it's really great, interesting, novel stuff and brings some excitement and pleasure to your dinner table.
Right. Well, and that brings me to my last thing I wanted to mention. You're profiled in a story in our upcoming summer issue of Edible Austin that talks about biodiversity and heritage foods and the importance of maintaining heritage plant species and even breeds of animals in our food system. And I believe we have some really lovely looking speckled lettuce and some Cherokee purple tomatoes from your farm featured in this story. And and if you want to just say a final few words about the importance of keeping these species alive.
Well, you know, things like Cherokee purple, it's an heirloom. We can save the seed and next year's crop will be Cherokee purple. And same thing with the speckled lettuce. There are these old breeds that are fantastic. They've been around for many years, hundreds of years in some cases. And these really are the security we need going forth in our food. To truly be able to feed yourself with something when maybe seeds are no longer available, who knows? I mean, there's all these scary things about the future. But if we can save these heritage breeds and keep them alive in our gardens, then if anything happens, we've got the seeds for the future, and that's so important.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carol Ann, thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to having you back on the show with Downtown on the Farm with Carol Ann, and I hope you have a good harvesting week.
Well, thank you, Marla. I enjoy being on your show. Thank you so much.
Well, we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back with our third guest.
Elle est à toi, cette chanson, toi l'Auvergnat qui sans façon m'a donné quatre bouts de bois quand dans ma vie il faisait froid. Toi qui m'as donné du feu quand les croquantes et les croquants, tous les gens bien intentionnés m'avaient fermé la porte au nez. Ce n'était rien qu'un feu de bois, mais il m'avait chauffé le corps, et dans mon âme il brûle encore, à la manière d'un feu de joie. Toi l'Auvergnat, quand tu mourras, quand le croque-mort t'emportera, qu'il te conduise à travers ciel, au Père éternel. Elle est à toi cette chanson, toi l'hôtesse qui sans façon m'a donné quatre bouts de pain quand dans ma vie il faisait faim. Toi qui m'ouvris ta huche quand les croquantes et les croquants, tous les gens bien intentionnés s'amusaient à me voir jeûner.
Welcome back. This is Marla Camp, publisher of Edible Austin and member of Edible Communities. You're listening to Taproots on Heritage Radio Network, and the show today is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Thanks for joining us. Well, my next guest is French chef Alain Brault. We're very excited to have here with us today. He just wrote a book called How to Lower Your Cholesterol with French Gourmet Food, and it's a delightful read. It's not only a recipe book, but it's a lesson in how to live a nutritious life and a healthy life. So he's currently the executive chef at People's Pharmacy in Austin, Texas. He's hard at work on a new book that we'll talk about in a little bit, too. And I'd like to welcome you to the show, Alain.
Hello, Marla. Nice to hear you again.
Well, good. Alain, I wanted you to talk to our listeners a little bit about what inspired you to write this book about lowering your cholesterol with French gourmet food.
Well, it's mostly based on my own experience. Being a chef, and at the time I was working in a very stressful environment and a very erratic way of eating, and unfortunately, I have to say, I was eating very American style. And you know, my surprise when I went to the doctor on my regular annual checkup is my cholesterol was up to 240. And I didn't think I'd, you know, did anything wrong, but then I went back and thought it through and then realized, you know, all the things that I was doing that I talk about in the book that, you know, drinking a lot of coffee, eating at odd hours, eating on the run, stress, high stress level, all of that affects your health and also your cholesterol level. So when I switched over and I got a job at People's Pharmacy, I vowed to lower my cholesterol and basically apply my own beliefs only using food. I'm a nutritionist, but better yet, I like to call myself a nutri-therapist, which is the term that is used in Europe, because I use only food as a healing medium. And so I decided to use myself as a test case, and I apply some of the ideas and rules that I describe in my book. And in 1 year, I lowered my cholesterol 35 points without the use of statin drugs.
Oh, that's just wonderful. That's really inspiring. I wonder if you could give us just a little bit of a quick chemistry lesson about what are the two kinds of cholesterol, why are they important to our health, and why it's important to understand the difference.
Right, right. Keeping in mind that I'm not a doctor and I'm not a scientist, I'm going to try to keep it simple. Cholesterol is basically sort of a fat. It's a waxy substance that our body uses for many different uses, for creating male and female hormones to protect your cells from build the outer wall of your cells and then protection from outside interference. Unfortunately, cholesterol has been vilified, and not that I'm saying it's the good guy, but as it's typically done, it's been, say you throw the baby with the bathwater. You focus on one item because it's easier to understand, but they don't necessarily give you the whole picture. So what you typically get when you go to the doctor and you ask for your cholesterol level, you get basically one number, which is your total cholesterol level, which is by no means the whole picture. You should, and you should request the full report with all the numbers. So you have LDL cholesterol, which is low-density lipoproteins. Then you have HDL, which is high-density. You have triglyceride, which is also a very important number that we don't focus on enough. And so you get all these numbers, and then you compare them to my numbers in the book, and then you look at ratios. This is the most important part of it, is ratios. And for example, an ideal ratio between your LDL to HDL, so you divide your LDL number by your HDL number, and ideally your number should be below 3 to 1. You can also use another ratio, which is your total cholesterol divided by your HDL cholesterol, and then you should keep those numbers below 5. So that's the ideal. Now, what some people don't know is that a few years ago, the acceptable level of cholesterol was 240, and then 2001, the pharmaceutical companies and the U.S. FDA got together, and they decided to lower that number to 200.
At the safe level.
Of course, there's a conflict of interest there.
Uh-huh.
Of course, pharmaceutical companies are bound to make millions of dollars out of the additional business created by this number drop. So that's why I'm saying most of the time when I talk to my clients, my private clients, is that don't focus just on the big number. We have to look at your ratios. The short version of it, the LDL, what is called the bad cholesterol, it's not in itself bad, but it takes your cholesterol from your liver outwards into your vessels, and it tends to deposit in your arteries. And that's the bad part of it. But it's not really the fault of the cholesterol. And I'll explain that later. And then the HDL, which is labeled the good cholesterol, is the cholesterol that moves the fat from your body into the liver to be broken down and eliminated. So that's why, ideally, we're trying to keep the LDL number lower, trying to lower the LDL, the bad cholesterol, and we're trying to increase the HDL. And there's different ways to do that. So that's kind of the short version of the whole thing. Remember, in itself, cholesterol is not a bad thing because it's absolutely necessary for our health. So some people that brag their cholesterol is very low, it's actually a bad sign. I wouldn't recommend your cholesterol being too low because our body needs and we need it to survive.
Exactly. Well, tell us how the French philosophy about food and how healthy food is one of life's pleasures. How did the whole French philosophy, or describe the French philosophy and how that is what you base your interaction with cholesterol levels on?
How many hours do we have?
Well, no, just make it the short version.
I know.
Because it's really the foundation of your book, how the kind of food, it's not only healing with the food, but it's the kind of food and the way you prepare it.
Right. I have been a chef for 40 years. I've been in a different position throughout, my professional years. And eventually I started studying nutrition because I was intrigued about the power of food on one's health and the effect, good food or bad food would keep you healthy or make you sick. There's definitely a correlation. So basically, instead of approaching it from the point of view of a nutritionist, which is mostly interested in the nutrition elements of the food, which is, of course, is important, but we don't want to focus only on like vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin B. I'm coming from the point of view of a chef that eventually became a nutritionist, and I'm approaching it from the food point of view, which is you choose foods that are good quality, healthy, fresh, organic, locally grown, and full of vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients and all the good stuff you get from eating fresh food. And then the whole idea is that good food will keep you healthy, fight off oxidation, keep your cholesterol levels lower, and keep you going all the time. But where the French principle comes in is that in this country, most of the time when you talk about a diet or some kind of a regimen, most people think automatically boring, dull, bland, limp foods, because typically it's always been, vegetables have been boiled for 2 hours, to where they completely lose all their nutrients. And that was the old-fashioned way to look at nutrition, to keep you healthy. And I personally beg to differ, both from personal experience and from my background as a chef, is that healthy food can taste and should taste great. There's no reason we should, cringe when you look at the plate of healthy food. Healthy food should taste great, and in my case, I make a point of making my food taste great, because otherwise the patient will never follow the diet, the patient knows it's good for them, but on the other hand, they look at menu and they go, "Ooh, I don't want to eat that stuff. It's not appealing." So in order to get my clients to encourage them to stay healthy, you want to offer them dishes that are beautiful to look at, colorful, pleasant, and they taste great as well. So it makes you, not only makes you healthy, but also makes you feel good about yourself, makes you feel good that you're actually following the diet, and makes you all feel good because you get healthier. I mean, that's the whole idea. I mean, why should we have to suffer through a diet when it's so much easier or so easy to create a delicious food diet?
Well, and so much of it is the food ingredients that you choose to use. But another big component that I learned from reading your book, it's the way that we cook, the methods of preparation that also have a very important effect on the quality, nutritional quality of the food that you eat. And I had a wonderful shopping experience at the farmer's market this weekend. I bought fresh asparagus. I got seafood, some red snapper that was just caught in the Gulf of Mexico here on our Texas coast. I got greens right out of our garden, one of our last batches of garden greens.
Yes.
And I used your book to prepare a very simple meal for my husband and myself. And I braised the asparagus in a little bit of homemade vegetable broth.
Right.
That was delicious. I'd never cooked asparagus that way before, mm-hmm. and that was directly from your book.
Right.
And I used your method for cooking fish, which I'd like you to describe for us.
Okay.
And it was the best fish I've cooked. It's the only way I'm going to cook fish from now on.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. That's what I want to hear from my either from my readers or from my clients, that they actually enjoy the food. As far as the, you know, my opinion, the healthy food preparation, there's raw, of course. I'm not a raw foodie, but, you know, my diet is about half raw food, mostly in salads, you know, colorful, pretty salads with my own dressing that I created. And then light steaming is another way where you steam it just like 4 or 5 minutes at the most, and you keep all the nutrients. You break down the fibers, but you do not lose all the vitamins and minerals. Blanching is another way. It's not my favorite because the vitamins tend to leach out, but it's still okay as long as you don't boil the vegetable for 2 hours. A couple of minutes, then dip them in ice water and stop the cooking, and they will be nice and crunchy. Simmering, of course, that applies a lot to soups. Broth poaching, which is what you use, is you use a little vegetable broth, which is easy to find in any stores nowadays. And you put, I'd say, depending on the size of your pan, let's say half an inch of broth in the bottom of your pan. You simmer gently, and then you add your vegetable to it, and then you flip them over after about 3 minutes, and they're ready. And they're very tasty, and they're still full of vitamins. And of course, you want to use the rest of the broth for a soup, as a base for a soup. If you have any leftovers, you can always blend it together with the broth and create a healthy soup with that. And there's quick sautéing and quick broiling, which is the technique you mentioned about with the food. And finally, papillote, where the fish or meat, most of the time it's fish, but it's cooked with vegetable, and it's enclosed in a paper case that will keep all the juices and all the steam and all the flavors together. And when you open that, the paper pocket, all the flavors are coming out and makes it very healthy, very, very light. The quick broiling method that I've learned from working in a restaurant is basically you set your broiler on, and then you put a heavy pan with a stainless steel or cast iron. My favorite is Le Creuset. I've had my Le Creuset pans for 30-something years, and they still look great. And they are basically, Le Creuset are cast iron coated with ceramic, so they don't stick. They're a little heavy, but they're very good, and also they distribute the heat very well. So you put that in under your broiler for at least 10 minutes to make sure the pan is really, really hot. So be careful. Make sure to handle it carefully. Of course, you don't want any handle that has wood on it. Just make sure it's a metal handle or. And then you can either marinate your fish. You can sprinkle with spices on it. And then just drop it on the pan, stick it back up under the broiler, and then typically, depending on thickness of your fish, 2 or 3 minutes is enough because you're getting the heat from the bottom, from the pan, is seizing the meat. The heat from the broiler is seizing from the top. So you have a nice crust on your fish, and yet the center is very tender and very tasty. So that's the technique I use. At home, I have a little toaster oven, and I crank it up, and it takes only 2 to 3 minutes to cook a piece of fish that way.
And I have to say,
also for some meats as well.
Yes, it was very delicious. It was great. And so tell us just briefly, there are a couple of preparations that you should avoid. You've talked about some of the good ways
yes.
to prepare food. Tell us just a few of the things
to avoid.
If a lot of Texans
are listening, I'm going to make some enemies here, but I think it's more important than I tell you about what's bad for you. My number one bad is, well, actually, it's not the worst, but it's pretty bad, is deep fat frying. Unless you cook something in oil once and then throw the oil away and then never reuse it again, when you overheat the oil over and over and over, you turn it into a toxic material for your body. And this is one of the reasons why you do not want to use commercially created oils that are overheated, and they use toxins like hexane to make it clear. But that's another point. So when you overheat and then reheat, whether it's oil or hydrogen fats or whatever the frying medium is, you not only you damage the oil, which eventually is going to damage you, but you also there's going to be particles in there left over from previous frying that will burn and turn cancer causing.
Yes, carcinogenic.
So that's number one. Then, and this is the bad part for Texans, is grilling is not good for you. Because when you're grilling, all these wonderful burned line of, when you grill the meat, that's actually toxic for you. And it is also cancer-causing. So I personally recommend to avoid it. You want to avoid high-temperature cooking as well, because the longer you cook something, the more you're going to kill its benefits. Vitamin, minerals, all that's going to go out of the door, literally. So you have food with no nutritional value. And then the worst of all in my book is microwaving. Microwaving not only... there's a chance of overheating your food, which, of course, will, again, destroy all the nutrients. But also, it has been proven over and over again that microwaving actually changes the cellular structure of the food that you are cooking and makes it dangerous for your body. As a matter of fact, in the 1970s, the Russian government forbid Russian people from using microwave ovens. It's against the law to use microwave ovens.
Hmm.
And here we are in this country, and we're nuking our food like there was no tomorrow. So if you want to stay healthy, avoid microwaving.
Well, and Alon, I wonder if you can tell us, first of all, where to buy your book. And I highly recommend this book for everyone, even people in good health. This is a wonderful read, as well as some really terrific recipes and organizing your meal preparation and all kinds of chef tips throughout. And then just tell us briefly, because we'll have to go in a minute here, but tell us briefly about your new book coming out.
Well, first, the first book you can find in Austin, you can find at all the People's Pharmacy stores. If you want it signed by me, you need to come to the Westlake store. The book is free, but the signature is $20, basically. And otherwise, if you're not from Austin, you can find it easily online, Amazon.com. And now you can even get it at very good prices. People are reselling it for a lower price. And all the major online retailers, Barnes & Noble, and so on and so forth. It's also available as a downloadable file for Kindle, iPad, and all these electronic readers now.
Uh-huh.
And as far as the new book, I'm working on a how to live or how to eat gluten and dairy-free with French gourmet food. A lot of my clients have celiac disease and are allergic to gluten and dairy, especially autistic children. And there's a need for not just gluten-free food and recipes, but there's also a need for and a demand for good-tasting gluten-free food. Unfortunately, a lot of the products out there that are gluten-free, they're not very tasty. And some of them taste like sand when you eat them. And you can attest, I'm sure you can attest that my flourless chocolate cake is a good example of how good dessert can be without flour.
Yes, and again, just it's the most amazing combination of pleasure and health that you can imagine.
Absolutely.
So, Alon, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I go to bookpeople.com, amazon.com, any place that sells a book, and or in Austin, you can go to People's Pharmacy and find it. And we look forward to your next book and having you on our show again. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks again to all of our guests today, and thanks for to Taproots on Heritage Radio Network. I'd like to thank our sponsor one more time, Hearst Ranch, for making this show possible. And I'll see you again on Taproots.